I think when it comes down to it, the time works out one way or the other. It's all good. So when we left off yesterday in our class, we had begun to speak about the 37th chapter of Ezekiel. To start on the subject, what I really wanted to hit home with each of you is understanding that Ezekiel is a type in this chapter, and I think that that's something in some of our expositions that we read in periodicals sometimes is missed. Ezekiel is called the Son of Man, as we pointed out. Ezekiel speaks the word unto the dry bones. Ezekiel will hold the two sticks in his hand. And as such, he is typical of Christ, who will perform those works. And a point of clarification, I was asked yesterday that I keep emphasizing that these are works that Christ will do. Certainly, we hope to be His assistants in that process. We could use the phrase the multitudinous Christ here. But the reason why I have singularly focused in on Christ is I've been really working hard in these restoration prophecies to draw a parallel between Romans 11 for you, and I really want you to see that. They rejected their Messiah. The glory and honor of regathering the nation belongs to the man they rejected first and foremost. So, he is a typical man. He will participate in this vision as well when we speak of Ezekiel. We talked at the end of class yesterday about Ezekiel is told to prophesy unto these bones and say unto them, O ye dry bones, hear the word of Yahweh. Several scriptures we made reference to quickly as I was trying to finish up and really didn't read. Deuteronomy 28, verses 25 and 26. Yahweh shall cause thee to be smitten before thine enemies, and thou shalt go out one way against them, and flee seven ways before them, and shalt be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth, and thy carcass shall be meat unto all the fowls of the air, and unto the beast of the earth, and no man shall fray them away. Moses told the people that if they were disobedient, punishment would come. Moses never said that all of the disobedient generations of Israel were going to suffer these punishments, but don't worry, the very last one won't. He never said that. Matthew chapter 24, verse 28. For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. There's the dry bones. And that's, I really think that it's a really great study to go through Ezekiel 37, Matthew 24, and Romans 11 and put them all together. They really dovetail quite nicely together. And what's Luke's rendering of Matthew 24, 28? Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Matthew says your carcass is going to be devoured. Luke says you're going to be trodden down until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Paul says you're going to be in blindness until the fullness of Gentile times is completed. And this last reference is quite interesting. I was going to skip over it, and I reminded myself last night I wanted to come back to it. Jeremiah 50 and verse 17. Israel is a scattered sheep. You think Yahweh certainly wanted Jeremiah and Ezekiel to speak of similar concepts, you know, without question. Just as Ezekiel in the 34th chapter saw Israel as a sheep in need of a shepherd, Jeremiah says they are a scattered sheep. The lions have driven him away. First, the king of Assyria hath devoured him. And last, this Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, hath broken his bones. Very significant language. So here we have very dry bones that Ezekiel sees. They are devastated by the nations, and they are devoid of the truth. They are devoid of life. And Paul says, and I'm going to pound this point home in Romans 11, what is their condition now? They are in unbelief. They are dead. As long as they are in unbelief, they are dead. When they escape that position of unbelief, Paul says, it is like life from the dead. So Ezekiel says to the bones, you know, this is where I want you to really focus in on, you know, last 60 years, not quite 60 years, but, you know, you go back six decades, and some Christadelphians have tried to put a, well, there's a lot of steps here in Ezekiel 37, and the nation's reforming in 48 answers to the first step. But I really want you to pay attention closely to how the prophecy really works here. You know, we've got to assemble the whole body together. Can bones get up and walk around once they're joined together? They can't. In nature, can you just put sinew on bones and okay, they're ready to move about? No. Without flesh over the bones, without air moving through the lungs, without blood moving through the veins, without a brain to direct it all, the bones can't do anything. So the type here has to be complete. And what I'm going to really pound home here for you now, and young people hone in right now on what I'm about ready to say if you miss everything else. Israel is going to be taught the truth from the inside out. Ezekiel starts with the bone here, because the truth needs to permeate in them to the deepest part of their bodies in order for them to go through the transformation that Yahweh requires of them. So the first verse that I have on here besides Romans 10:17 is very, very important, I think, to our understanding. And it's a memory verse. For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit. And what's the next line? Maybe it's not a memory verse. Joints and marrow. The joints and the marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and the intents of the heart. Ezekiel says to the bones, hear the word of Yahweh. It needs to get into the deepest part of the body. The bone is the hardest place to penetrate. But in order to get rid of that stubbornness that the flesh has and has been greatly manifested in Abraham's natural seed, the word is going to pierce even to that very hardest portion of the body to get to. And when that happens, only then will Ezekiel's prophecy begin to come true. Hear the word of Yahweh. The word here in Hebrew for word is a very important term. It's the Hebrew word dabar, daber. I think that's how you would pronounce it in Hebrew, because if you say I speak Hebrew, you'd say at me daber de ivrit. So I think it's daber. At least that's how they say it today. Of course, I said it with an English accent, so it probably wasn't close either. But anyway, this word deber refers to the oracle of the Most Holy very frequently in the Scriptures. 1 Kings 8:6, it's used of that regard, of the most holy. They're going to have to hear the deepest things of Yahweh's truth. The most intricate details that they could not get from the law of Moses because they failed to see it as a schoolmaster, they're going to hear at this point in time. They're going to hear the word of Yahweh. I knew I was going to do that one time through here. Isaiah 58, 11 and 12. We'll turn that one up. This is an excellent verse, and maybe it's good if y'all turn this one up with me and take a look at it. Isaiah 58, 11 and 12. And Yahweh shall guide thee continually and satisfy thy soul in drought and make fat thy bones. And thou shalt be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. And they that shall be of thee shall build the old waste places. Thou shalt raise up the foundations of the generations. And thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the paths to dwell in. Very interesting that Yahweh intends to make fat their bones. So when we see the ideal of very dry bones here, I think we need to make sure that we understand the spiritual implication of it. We're looking at the innermost self, if you will. The deepest parts of the body that need to be transformed. Bones cannot be made fat in the spiritual sense unless they hear the word and live. Isaiah 66, 12 through 14. For thus saith Yahweh, behold, I will extend peace to her like a river, and the glory of the Gentiles like a flowing stream. Then ye shall suck, ye shall be borne upon her sides, and ye shall be dangled upon her knees. As one whom his mother comforteth, so will I comfort you. And ye shall be comforted in Jerusalem. And when ye see this, your heart shall rejoice, and your bones shall flourish like an herb. And the hand of Yahweh shall be known towards his servants, and his indignation towards his enemies. Take all the prophets together, and can we start to see this come together? Yahweh intends to make the bones of Israel flourish. But without an understanding of the truth, that cannot happen. So Ezekiel starts with the bone. Within this chapter, let me go ahead and bring all of these bullet points up. It's very important that we understand that verses 1 through 10 give a prophecy of the bones. Verses 11 through 14 give further illustration of that prophecy. And then verse 15 onward through the parable of the dried sticks is going to do the same. So when we start to compare verses 11 with verse 4, and you really kind of need to do that. You almost need to take a piece of paper and start through those verses and figure out how to meld them and mesh them together. It's very clear when you do that, that confession is part of this process. Confession is part of the process. And this is where we go back to what Brother Robert Roberts wrote. That though Israel will not be gathered together because of any moral condition, there will be a national purgation that will be required. Got to put both paragraphs there, full quote. We can't just drop it one paragraph and say, well, Robert says no moral transformation is needed. He goes on to say in the next paragraph, well, yeah, they've got to be purged. And part of this purging process is going to be determining which one of them will hear the word and which will not. And the confession will be required of them. And it's said in the 11th verse, which is a parallel verse to the 4th verse. What do the bones say? Verse 11, then he said unto me, Son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel. Highlight that. The whole house of Israel. Not just a part of the house of Israel. Not just those who have participated in the Aliyah. The whole house of Israel. There's a lot of the house of Israel that's not in the land at this moment. More than half of the Jews do not live in Israel today. Behold, they say, our bones are dried, our hope is lost. We are cut off from our parts. That's what the bones say. There is confession. There must become a time when Israel realizes and becomes so desperate that they know they're lost. Are they there now? Certainly they're not. They need to recognize the condition of their bones so that the word of Yahweh will penetrate deep into those bones. I'm going to go back to Romans 11, even though I've got it later on this slide in front of you, and pick out a verse there. Romans 11. And I think this is where we get that confession that we've got to understand. Verse 15, for if the casting away of them be the reconciling of the world, what shall be the receiving of them but life from the dead? Verse 19, thou wilt say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Well, because of unbelief they were broken off. Verse 23, if they abide not still in unbelief, shall they be grafted in? Well, the answer is yes. Belief has to precede the grafting in again. Belief and confession is put forth in this 11th verse. Our bones are dried, our hope is lost. Isaiah 49:14, but Zion said, Yahweh hath forsaken me, and my Lord hath forgotten me. Jeremiah 30, verse 7. Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is even the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. Zechariah 12, verses 10 through 14. And I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and the spirit of supplication. And there's some allusions to Ezekiel 37 there in that very verse, isn't there? And they shall look upon me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. In that day there shall be a great mourning in Jerusalem, as the mourning of Hadad-Rimmon in the valley of Megiddon. And the land shall mourn, every family apart. And then we go into a description of all those that will indeed mourn. Our bones are dried, our hope is lost. And they will look upon him whom they have pierced, and they will mourn. There needs to be that mourning before there can be the transformation that is required of them. We are cut off. So, the 12th verse says, behold, O my people, I will open your graves and cause you to come up out of your graves and bring you into the land of Israel. Now, when we meld that 12th verse with what Paul says in Romans, it is clear they have not come out of their graves. They're still dead. They don't believe the truth. But Ezekiel says, I will open your graves. I will cause you to come up out of your graves. That's a sign of resurrection. Paul makes it clear that this resurrection accompanies belief and bring you into the land of Israel. Now let's go back up a little bit into the text. And this is where I think we've got to meld this information together and piece it together and put it all in its place. Well, the sixth verse continues, and well, the fifth and the sixth. Thus saith Adonai Yahweh unto these bones. And I would suggest this takes place after they confess that we're lost. Behold, I will cause breath to enter into you, and ye shall live. And I will lay sinews upon you, and bring you up flesh upon you, and cover you with skin, and put breath in you, and ye shall live, and ye shall know that I am Yahweh. So I prophesied as I was commanded, and as I prophesied, there was a noise, and behold, a great shaking. And the bones came together, bone upon his bone. Now that's really critical. Ezekiel's given the information, and then when he begins to say it, what is the process that starts everything in motion? And that's where we've got to be careful when we piece all this together. Verses 5 and 6, Ezekiel's given the information that he's going to say. And then verse 7, so I prophesied. And as Ezekiel speaks, what happens? There is a noise and a shaking. And the bones came together, bone upon bone. The word that Ezekiel uses here is very important for the noise in the shaking. It is the kol, which is frequently the word that is used for the great trumpet blast for Israel. I have a reference up there for you to prove that. Exodus 20:18. And all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. When the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. That's the noise that brings the bone to bone. It's the sound of the trumpet. Who's going to make that trumpet blast, brethren? Where does it come from? Turn to Matthew 24:31. I want you to look at this verse with me. I made reference to it a couple of classes ago, and I'm going to read verses 30 and 31 again. Well, all right. I already know I'm not going to finish all my material tomorrow. I'm going to summarize it, so it really doesn't matter how long it takes. We're just going to get through what we can. Verse 28, for wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. The carcass is where the dry bones are going to be. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven shall be shaken. Then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. That's a Bible-marking note that belongs in Ezekiel 37. But young people, write it in pencil. Prove it to yourself. All right? Don't put it in ink until you're convinced of it. But there's no coincidence that both Ezekiel is called the Son of Man and Christ here is called the Son of Man. Then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn. Our bones are dried, our hope is lost. Those are the tribes that mourn. And they shall see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Who are the clouds of heaven? They're us, hopefully. You and me are the clouds of heaven. And this is why I think sometimes people go, Mac, there you go again on the Olivet prophecy. We all know it's a prophecy that relates just to, you know, things of the last days. You know, it's really important that we understand the context of the Olivet prophecy. And with the exception of the verses we're looking at, I think we miss the boat too often. We think that Peter, James, John, and Andrew stood down in front of the Lord and said, hey, tell us when your second advent's going to be. But they didn't even believe he was going to die. They couldn't even ask that question. So we tend to look at this as these verses as being applied to us. We hear the great sound of the trumpet in verse 31, and we think it's speaking of our resurrection. But that's not what the Lord's talking about here. And it's not the question he's answering. He's answering the question about Israel's fate. They'll see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Christ in the multitudinous body. And he shall send his angels with the great sound of the trumpet. That's the call. That's the noise and the shaking of Ezekiel 37, verse 7. A great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. Now, in all the verses I've read in Romans 11, I've stopped before I got to one verse. And what does that one verse say? It's concerning the gospel. The Jews, I'm paraphrasing Paul's words, they're enemies for your sake. But as touching the what? The election. They're the elect of this verse. The angels better be you and me that gather them together. He shall send his angels with a great sound of a trump, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. I suggest to you, brethren, there's really no other way we can understand that verse because we know what the symbol of the clouds are. We understand that symbol very well. It's us. There will be a great shaking, a great quaking. This same noise is associated in chapter 3 and verse 12 with the cherubim, another symbol of the multitudinous body. In chapter 3, in verse 12. I intended just to kind of state that point and go on, but let's look at it. Then the Spirit took me up, and I heard behind me a voice of a great rushing, saying, "Blessed be the glory of Yahweh from His place." I heard also the noise of the wings of the living creatures that touched one another, and the noise of the wheels over against them, and a noise of a great rushing. So the Spirit lifted me up and took me away, and I went. You think when Ezekiel is inspired to use these same Hebrew words to describe this great noise and the shaking, that he understands that we're looking at the work of the cherubim right here? I think he got it. And I think we need to get it. We need to hear that. We need to understand it. This concept of the shaking is not foreign to us. Zechariah 14, verse 5, "And ye shall flee," speaking to Israel, "to the valley of the mountains. For the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Azel. Yea, ye shall flee like as ye fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. And Yahweh, my God, shall come and all the saints with thee." The end of that fifth verse is Matthew 24, 30 and 31. Same concept, same idea. A noise and a great shaking. Ezekiel 38, verse 19, same concept. "For in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath have I spoken. Surely in that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel." Revelation 16, 18, "And there were voices and thunders and lightnings and a great earthquake, such as was not since the men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great." There's just no coincidence, brethren. There's going to be this great shaking. And the consequence of this great shaking is that Gentile powers are going to be thrown down, and the bones, the dry bones, are going to be reassembled and put together bone upon bone. It's the work of the cherubim. It's the work of the angels here in Ezekiel that does this. The four winds. Let's talk a little bit about this concept here. Verse 9. I think I read through 7 and I stopped. So let's go back. Verse 8 and 9. And when I behold, lo, the sinews and the flesh came up upon them, and the skin covered them above, but there was no breath in them. Then said he unto me, prophesy unto the wind. Prophesy, son of man, and say to the wind, thus saith Adonai Yahweh, come forth, come from the four winds, O breathe. Settle down a second. I get excited and I can't read anything. Come forth, the four winds, O breath, and breathe upon these slain, that they may live. It's very critical. Once again, we equate verse 9 to Romans 11. They're still in that slain condition. They haven't come forth out of their graves. But who are the four winds? Who are the ruach here that use their breath to breathe upon the slain that they may live? Well, in Zechariah 6 in verse 5, I think we've got an interesting parallel that I want us to equate to this. And the angel answered and said unto me, these are the four spirits of the heavens which go forth from the standing before the Lord of the earth. Well, the margin there in the Oxford edition says these are the four angels, the four winds. All right. The margin gives us the idea that these four spirits are the four winds. And we know that those chariots, once again, in Zechariah 6, are typical of the glorified saints, the redeemed. It is the four winds. Same word is used as the chariots in Zechariah. It is the four chariots, the angels of Matthew 24:31, that will go forth and breathe the Spirit word. How many of you have hoped and pictured that your life in the kingdom would be teaching the truth? How many of you have hoped that, you know, your words won't fall in vain to co-workers and other people one day? How many of you have looked forward to a time that you can breathe the word on someone and they'll live? Well, that's the hope that is set before the redeemed saint in the kingdom age. They're going to assist the Son of Man. It's the four winds who assist the Son of Man in breathing the word into Israel. Ezekiel 36, verses 26 and 27. A new heart also will I give you, a new spirit will I put in you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and ye shall keep my judgments and do them. How's that going to happen? Is it just going to be a snap of the fingers? It's going to be the work of Christ and His brethren to teach that truth to Israel, to breathe the word into them that they no longer might be those dead, slain ones. Ezekiel 39, verse 29. Neither will I hide my face anymore from them, for I have poured out my spirit upon the house of Israel, saith Adonai Yahweh. These events bring life to the whole house of Israel, not just a portion of it. You know, there's 7.8 million Jews that aren't living in the house of Israel today. So if Ezekiel says these bones are the entirety of the house of Israel, 1948 cannot be our answer, brethren. The whole house lives. How does anyone receive life from the dead, spiritually, as it were? How do we receive life from the dead? How do we turn from a situation from being dead in trespasses and sins to being alive? Deuteronomy 30, verses 15 through 20, I think is a really good reference here. And it's my Bible marking note that I've put right next to verse 5. See, I have set before thee this day life and good, death and evil, in that I commanded thee this day to love Yahweh thy God, to walk in his ways, to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, that thou mayest live and multiply, and Yahweh thy God shall bless thee in the land whither thou goest to possess it. Down to verse 20, that thou mayest love Yahweh thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto him, for he is thy life, and the length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which Yahweh sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, to give them. And we know that Moses spoke very prophetically in those last three chapters, don't we? We know that the intention of, you know, when we look at Deuteronomy 30 through 33, that we're seeing a depiction of the kingdom age prophesied. And that's exactly what we see here in the 37th of Ezekiel. Last point I want to make here concerning, I needed to hit one more button. Concerning this section of the prophecy, as verse 10 concludes and says, so I prophesied as he commanded me, and the breath came into them, and they lived, and stood upon their feet, an exceeding great army. An exceeding great army. When they live, they will become a great army. A great army for Yahweh's purpose. Zechariah 9, verses 13 through 15. When I have bent Judah for me, filled the bow with Ephraim, and raised up thy sons, O Zion, against thy sons, O Greece, and made thee a sword of a mighty man. And Yahweh shall be seen over them, and his arrow shall go forth as the lightning. And Adonai Yahweh shall blow the trumpet and shall go with the whirlwinds of the south. I didn't spend any time on the 14th verse, but just review it once again. Think about the process that goes on here. And think about how verse 14 really doesn't, in my mind, and hopefully you see it in your mind, doesn't leave room for processes of bones getting up and walking around with, you know, sinews or on them. Bones can't move unless there's a brain to direct it. You know, unless there's life to pump oxygen to that brain and blood to pump, you know, everything needed to that brain, the bones can't do anything. Bones of their own self cannot do anything. And the symbol has to be complete. Verse 13 and 14 together. Ye shall know that I am Yahweh. When will they know that I am Yahweh? When I have opened your graves. When I have brought you up out of your graves. When I put my spirit in you. Then shall ye live. I will place you in your own land. Then shall ye know that I, Yahweh, have spoken it and performed it, saith Yahweh. Now I paraphrase that verse because I really wanted to hit some highlights there. We cannot separate the opening of the grave with the putting of the Spirit within them. This is not a process that begins before Ezekiel begins to speak. It is a process that only started when Ezekiel said the words, the Son of Man. Okay, the rest of the chapter, we've got a few minutes left here today, we'll see what happens. The rest of the chapter turns our attention to the prophecy of the two sticks. starts in verse 15. In verse 16, the Son of Man, Ezekiel, typically Christ, is told to take one stick for Judah and one for Ephraim. He is told to take those sticks and put both of them in his hand and join them together in his hand, in Yahweh's hand. Verse 17 says they will become one in thine hand. Verse 19 says one in mine hand. So the individual that puts the two sticks together has to be an individual who is capable of being a representation of both his own hand and Yahweh's hand. And I think that's a critical point. His own hand and Yahweh's hand. And then verse 21 and 22 says clearly to us, "Thus saith Adonai Yahweh, behold, I will take the children of Israel from among the heathen, whither they be gone, and will gather them on every side and bring them into their own land. And I will make them one nation upon the mountains of Israel." One nation upon the mountains of Israel. Another time we see the phrase the mountains of Israel, which clearly tells us it is wrong to take that phrase and say, well, the mountains of Israel in Ezekiel 38 only refers to this little tiny area north of Israel, and that's all where Gog's going to get to. Well, if that's what you really believe about Ezekiel 38, why don't you believe it about 37? Is that the only place that they're going to be made one nation upon? Is just that one little sliver? I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel, and one king shall be king to them all, and they shall no more be two nations. Once again, there's a very important parallel that runs between verse 22 and verse 12. Both prophecies, that of the sticks and of the bones, refer to the whole house of Israel being brought into the land of Israel. They're parallel prophecies. And what does clause 22 of the unamended statement of faith say? It says that that work will be performed by Jesus the Christ. Read clauses 19 through 22 of the unamended statement of faith. That for this purpose I will send Jesus. He will send Jesus back to the earth. And we get to that 22nd clause. And I think, brethren, we somehow along the way, everybody got so excited about what happened in 1948, they forgot what our own statement of faith said. The two sticks refer to the whole house of Israel. Lamentations 4:8. And I must have spelled it wrong on my Bible program because I just can't click on it and pull the verse up. Lamentations 4:8. The lamentations of Jeremiah, another man typical of Christ. Their visage is blacker than coal. They are not known in the streets. Their skin cleaveth to their bones. It is withered. It is become like a stick. Even Jeremiah writes in a way that shows this connection between the bones and the sticks. Son of man, Yeshua, Son of Man, put the sticks together. There'll be one in thine hand and one in mine hand. Isaiah 53, verse 1, there's a real interesting connection here. Turn to it. I want you to be able to look at this. Don't just listen to me say it. All right, we know the 53rd chapter is prophetic of Christ, but I think we've got the same type of wonderful simile set before us there as we do here in Ezekiel 37. The two sticks are going to go in thine hand, Son of Man, and they're one in mine hand. Who hath believed our report, and to whom is the arm of Yahweh revealed? Who is the arm of Yahweh? Who was the arm of Yahweh? Christ was the arm of Yahweh. That's how the arm of Yahweh was revealed, through Jesus. And then verse 10, the pleasure of Yahweh shall prosper in His hand. Speaking of the Messiah. Now in my Bible, I've drawn a line straight from the word arm in verse 1 to the word His hand in verse 10. It's a nice, in the Oxford edition, they're right next to each other. It was easy to do. The arm of Yahweh, the hand of Christ, together. Christ was the manifestation of His Father in the flesh. We know what Corinthians says. Paul writes to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians that God was in Christ, reconciling the world to Himself. How much more now? Now that He is not just representing the character of the deity, but He will come in a nature that is consubstantial with the deity. Son of man, put the sticks in thine hand. And then verse 19 says, they're one in mine hand. That works, Herb. I can't go on now. Good time to pause. We'll pick up right here tomorrow. Well, we'll see where I go. Thank you.